What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, bringing out podcast. That's me. That's the show. Appreciate everyone listening. Hope you guys had a fantastic Turkey Day. Put on a good five, maybe eight extra of those buffer pounds. You need it for the wintertime. That's how the bears hibernate, right? You put on a little extra weight, sleep a little bit better, and then we attack the new year with our diets. I'm actually recording this. I may still be in Hawaii, my sources say. Turned down dinner, though, tonight to watch the Monday Night Football game and spit a podcast. So we're going to talk. Obviously, we're going to dive right into the Monday Night Football game. Then going all around the league, from the Niners, the Ravens game, we got to touch on that, to the Chiefs and the Patriots, to the Cleveland Browns, to just everything else that happened this weekend. The Cowboys, because I didn't get to touch on that game last week. The Eagles lose to the Dolphins. Harbaugh can't beat Ohio State to save his life. We'll talk about it all. And like always, we'll end our show with the Middlecoff Mailbag. It's how I interact with you guys. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. Same as my Twitter handle. And those DMs are wide open. You slide up in it, ask any question you want, and you get on the show. It's how we interact with the in 2019. But let's start with the Monday Night Football game. And I saw this thing that went viral over the weekend. This guy that like worked with Navy SEALs, and he like asked what they look for in a SEAL Team 6 member, and they used a chart, and on one, you know, a perpendicular, I guess it was a right angle, 45-degree angle, right, or 90-degree angle, and on one side, 90-degree angle, one side of the chart, it's like the supply and demand chart, one side of the chart was production, and one side of the chart was trust. And he related it actually to a football team. Like, you know, everyone wants a productive, trustworthy player. But let's face it, the majority of guys aren't Tom Brady, aren't Khalil Mack, and just like in the SEAL Team 6, just the most members aren't just like the best shot, best athlete. There's a balance to it all. And ultimately what the Navy SEALs want, they would choose trust over productivity. And I think it relates a lot to business, because in business, it's just pretty black and white. Like, do you produce or do you not produce? And a lot of businesses get rid of really talented people. Maybe they have an off quarter. Maybe they have an off year. Who knows? But those people are very integral in their given office, on their given teams, just like in football. There are things when, listen, I scouted players and was around a football team. There are things that guys bring to the table that you can't quantify. When I was with the Eagles, like Brent Celek was a huge part of what we did. And you couldn't quantify what he did just based off catches, right? Just what the way he acted in the facility, the way he carried himself in the lunchroom. Every team has these guys. Every single team. Like the 49ers, where I'm around a lot, they have Joe Staley. Like, you can't quantify what he's meant to the organization over the last 10-plus years. He's been on the team longer. But when you watch the Seattle Seahawks, I feel pretty strongly about this. They're 10-2. I think they might be the least talented 10-2 team in the history of the league. But their guys, now, I'm not saying they don't have good players. They might have the MVP of the league in Russell Wilson. Chris Carson's a really good player. Tyler Lockett's a solid player. Bobby Wagner's been excellent forever. Clowney, a little overhyped, but he's a solid member of the squad. But for the most part, football, this isn't basketball. It's not a 6 or 7 man team. It's 53 guys. On game day, it's, what, 46? The guys that they're playing, top to bottom, they're playing with a lot of average players. And I've had this told to me by my scout buddies that work on the pro side. That don't like, yeah, I didn't really like that guy in college, or yeah, I like that guy in college. I'm talking about guys that have evaluated their 53-man roster the last several years. Be like, yeah, it's pretty crazy what they do. Because clearly John Schneider, Pete Carroll, there is no such thing as softness allowed in that operation. Since they've been kicking ass and taking names, it's a tough guy only football team. They crush people. They lay it all on the line every game because they're not as good. It's like the SEAL Team 6 members. They're taking the guys that are just a little more trustworthy. They don't have the most productive players on their team. But the stuff that you can't quantify with the Seattle Seahawks, toughness, desire to win, and Pete Carroll, like his intangible stuff that he brings to the table, his ability to coach these guys up, it's remarkable. How this team is 10-2 is, I'm at a loss for words. Now, I understand how they won on Monday Night Football. The game's at home. Seattle's crazy at night. Dalvin Cook, once he fumbles and leaves the game, I mean, he's Minnesota's best player. It kind of snowballed on him, even though Minnesota ended up making a game. But Seattle's doing this less about stuff that you can quantify and more about stuff that is never quantifiable in football. It's why, at the end of the day, the analytical movement can only do so much in football. Can you bring to the table how violent Chris Carson totes the rock every single time he gets the ball? Can you bring what they trade for that Diggs guy midseason from the Lions? How violent he plays? Attempt to quantify that. All I know is when he's coming downhill and you're carrying the ball, he's trying to break your face mask. And it was like that when I didn't know who Cam Chancellor was or Richard Sherman. I mean, I knew who Richard Sherman was. But these guys, like, when they're first and second years in the league. But it was pretty clear when they all started coming together. Jeez Louise, these guys are nuts. They are coming for blood. And since 2012, to this current game that we just witnessed on Monday Night Football, they've had the same mentality. They are a heavyweight fighter like Chuck Liddell who want to hit you directly in the chin. And more than likely, you're going to go down. And you might, maybe you'll hit them too. They'll get back up and keep swinging. Now, they're going to lose some fights, but they're going to be ready every time they enter that ring. Every time they play a team. Minnesota, top to bottom, more talented team. Now, in football, the quarterback has a huge, you know, percentage of impact on a squad. So Russell Wilson is, and Kirk Cousins is not bad, but Russell Wilson's infinitely better. There is not a person in the history of the world that would take Kirk Cousins over Russell Wilson. He's the MVP of the league, in my opinion. I'll talk about Lamar later, but I don't even think it's a question. At 10-2 and look destined potentially to win the division, think about this. So what makes the NFL so great? NBA ratings in the tank, because the NBA can't replicate what we just witnessed on Monday Night Football. The intensity, what's on the line, how hard players play. Like, that game would have looked the same if it was mid-September, if it was mid-January, if it was early November. That's the NFL, when you get good teams playing. And Minnesota, who is more talented top to bottom than Seattle, it's a great part about football. It's the one sport, maybe baseball a little bit if you have a really good pitcher. It's hard in basketball. If you have more talented players, you're typically going to win. That's not the case in football. Coaching matters. Like I said, the intangibles matter. The environment, I mean, Seattle's one of the rare places in the NFL. Like, the one thing the NFL doesn't have that college has is the intensity of the crowds. Well, that place in Seattle, I've actually never been to a Seahawks game. I've been to a couple University of Washington games when they played up there. But I've never been to a Seattle game. I would love to go to a night game because that place rocks. That place has an edge to it. And you can feel it. You can feel it coming through the speakers. The players, though, they're rocking because they know they got this tough squad. And it speaks to Pete Carroll, how hard he coaches these guys. John Schneider, about the type guys they locate and they bring into their program. They have a button-down operation. And obviously the wild card is Russell Wilson that just consistently dominates and makes plays when he has to. Okay, let's dive into the Minnesota Vikings. I still think they're a good football team. They are really, really talented. They had a swing play tonight when their best player on their team, Dalvin Cook, fumbled a ball, got hurt, also hurt Diggs. Luckily, Diggs came back in the game and he was fine. But Dalvin Cook not only fumbled, did Seattle recover, then he did not return. Now, their backup running back, dude they draft in the third round, I always mess up his name, the kid from Boise, is good. Like, so they actually were okay without him. But anytime that you lose your best player in the middle of the game, I think at the time it was 17-14. Was it 17-14? That was just a huge swing. And then they end up going down 34-17. And obviously Minnesota has a crazy comeback, but it fell short. Minnesota controlled their own destiny before this game. If they had ran the table, they actually were kind of like a sneaky, could have been the one seed. They win this game, get the tiebreaker there. Beat the Packers, would have won the division. Now, that's basically playing to win the division and to get to the 3 seed now. That's really their only goal, is to win out, get the 3 seed. But I still think Minnesota, especially if they have a home game, even if they have to go on the road as long as Dalvin Cook's healthy, will be a factor. Because as long as you can run the ball, as you saw tonight for the majority of the game when it was close. Kirk Cousins is fine. He's a play-action passer. And when he's in rhythm, he can be really accurate and he can be really good. But when he has to go Russell Wilson, hey guys, get on my back and I'll carry our ass, that's not really his thing, despite being paid like that. But sometimes I think we need to get past what a guy's paid at and what he actually is. What he is, he needs their defense to be top-notch. And for the most part, before the fumble, the defense was really good. Here's the problem for the Vikings. Their defense is not quite as good as it's been, mainly because Xavier Rhodes is just kind of a guy. Their coverage aspect with their highest-paid corner isn't great. Now, he did cause a fumble late in the game that actually helped them get back in the game, but right now he's a liability. Their pass rush is excellent. Hunter, Everson Griffin, studs. Kendricks in the middle, stud. Harrison Smith in the back end of the middle, stud. Corners, not great. And Zimmer, who's a defensive mastermind, can only blitz so much. When you can't cover on the outside, if you blitz all the time, you will get smoked. And they gave up some big plays tonight, especially against a guy like Russell Wilson that can avoid the blitz and keep plays alive. But offensively, if they get Thielen back, and clearly they're trying to bring him back this second time now, because I've never pulled a hammy, but like most of you, I've been watching sports long enough now and been around it for as a profession to know that when you rush these guys back, the likelihood of them re-pulling it feels like 95%. And they did that before, and he lasted like a series. Once you get, if you can get him back for just by that Packer game, they have, and Dalvin Cook, let's hope, is okay. They should have one of the more dynamic offenses in the league. They got two stud wide receivers, a star running back, and productive tight ends. You can't really ask for anything more. So I was actually pretty impressed. They showed a lot of mettle. They showed a lot of fight. Like I said, Seattle, I mean, we all know this. We've been watching football of the Pete Carroll era. It's got to be top two or three place to play on the road in a night game. You could argue it's the toughest place to play in a night game in the league, right up there with like Arrowhead, Foxborough. Like it's a short list, right? So I'm not just writing this team off just because they kind of lost. I wouldn't say tonight's a heartbreaker because they were kind of getting blown out there for a minute. But I actually was more impressed with their kind of comeback. They refused to tap out. This team's got a little more toughness this year. Now, Kirk Cousins is probably going to have to win a playoff game to make Minnesota fans feel like this wasn't a complete failure. Now, if they get the sixth seed, let's say they don't win the division, the Packers win the division, the Niners or the Seattle Seahawks are destined to be the five seed and would probably go to Dallas. The sixth seed, you would probably just get the Green Bay-Minnesota matchup. They would just replay each other. So you would get that matchup three times. So regardless of where that game is, Minnesota would feel they're pretty comfortable with that opponent. They're used to playing them. They know their personnel. And I think, again, if Thielen and Cooks are healthy, they would be a major, major threat to win a playoff game or to upset any team they played in the NFC. They have the talent. Now, they need Xavier Rhodes to play a little bit better. He's a major liability right now. And they're clearly not going to bench him because he makes too much money. But I'm not just going to act like Minnesota's just this average team because they're not. They actually speak to the dominance that is the NFC. If they're the NFC's, I guess Dallas would be the sixth best playoff team. But they wouldn't. I mean, the Rams are better than Dallas, but the Rams aren't going to make the playoffs. If of the group of five, let's just assume that Green Bay beats them in Minnesota, which it might be even unfair to assume. Of San Francisco, Seattle, New Orleans, Green Bay, and Minnesota, if Minnesota's the worst of that bunch, which actually I think there might be slightly better than Green Bay, but we'll let it play out. That's pretty good. If Green Bay and Minnesota are your fourth and fifth best teams in your conference, you're in pretty good shape because you got Aaron Rodgers and a really talented Vikings team. So it's going to be really hard to win in the NFC in the playoffs. And if Minnesota has to go to Lambeau, that's clearly going to be tough. If you have to go to Seattle, that's clearly going to be tough. It's going to be really hard to win the NFC. And as you saw tonight, to me, the NFC isn't just the most talented division. It's the most physical division. How physical all these teams are. And tonight was just a little bit like Seattle and San Francisco, a classic tough guy game where Kirk Cousins, you know, let's give him his due. He didn't just piss down his leg. I actually thought he was more than serviceable. Would you like a little bit more out of a $27 million quarterback? Sure. But at this point, we know who he is. He's a play-action killer. That's where he does his work. And the moment Dalvin Cook left, I went, this is going to be tough. And it was. Okay, let's get to 49ers-Ravens, which it's safe to say was the game of the day. And I watched it in Hawaii, got to a bar bright and early, and just locked in with some family friends, my family, and it was awesome. It's everything I love about football. Cold weather. Now, I personally hate cold weather, but I enjoy watching football when it's played in the elements. Rain, the Northeast, and two tough teams. And starting with the Ravens, like, if you play in Baltimore, you're just going to be tough. I think humans, like animals, adapt to their surroundings. That's why people in California are a little softer, especially Southern California. Why? Because it's average, you know, temperature of 88 degrees, 365. It's hard to just go to 30 degrees in rain and be like, oh, this is cool. Because it's not. But the Ravens excel in that weather. And I think this year has been a massive muscle flex for John Harbaugh. I've talked about it a lot on the show. His coaching staff is excellent. And I talked about it last week that football is, and especially this season, is the ultimate coaching staff, you know, connected with your player sport. Basketball, stars, baseball, GMs, and the spreadsheet run. In football, it's a combination of them both. John Harbaugh is an excellent football coach. Super Bowl champion for a reason. Excellent, you know, been in the playoffs countless times, won that division, which for years, people forget, like, it wasn't just them and the Steelers. The Bengals were good for a long period of time with Marvin Lewis. Greg Roman, Wink Martindale, they're just good. Their ability to adapt with Lamar Jackson, who we'll get into in a minute. It really is eye-opening to watch Harbaugh. And listen, I am pro going for it. I always say that. This notion that on social media, the analytics are finally winning, coaches are going for it. Literally every human in the history of watching football sitting in their couch wants their team to go for it, especially in big spots down the stretch. Oh, just the spreadsheet tell. No, it's common freaking sense. Now, yesterday, I thought he got a little reckless with one because in that game where points were at a premium, there were 3 points scored in the second half until Justin Tucker hit the game-winning field goal, which meant there were 6 total points scored in the second half. So just going for it every play is pretty risky, and they didn't get it. And if it wasn't for Kyle Shanahan calling a bad play call on a 4th-and-1, it could have bit him in the ass. But I do appreciate his ability to keep the pedal to the metal and go for it every time. But they do have this kind of feel like this team of destiny. Because watching them yesterday, you have no clue where the ball is going. Whether Lamar's going to keep, give, pitch, it's insane. Feels like he's mastered just the mesh point. And what makes him different than when Kaepernick and Greg Roman kind of took off in San Francisco, that it was just a keep or a give. I mean, same deal. Kaepernick wasn't elusive. He was so fast that he could get downhill, but he wasn't making guys miss. So if you could get into the backfield, you could screw up the play. You know what Lamar Jackson is? And it hit me yesterday. He's not Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes, who are going to consistently, when their teams win, throw for, you know, when they're playing well, 300 yards, you know, 3 or 4 touchdowns. They are pocket quarterbacks. Now, Watson's a good athlete, and Mahomes is a not quite Watson-level athlete, but he's also a good athlete. But they're not dependent on running the ball. Lamar Jackson's success, and I'm not trying to diminish anything he's doing, starts with his ability to dominate on the ground. He's basically Barry Sanders with a good arm because his ability to make guys miss, it's insane. His innate instincts as a runner are elite. And then you factor in he's an elite athlete. He's fast as hell. He put on a clinic yesterday, and there's nothing you can really do. Now, the one thing that jumped out to me, and I know other people have talked about this, the only way you can throw off that offense is to hit Lamar Jackson. If the running back, Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, whoever they're going to give it to is going to beat you, so freaking be it. But I'm going to hit Lamar Jackson. You can't hit him, I was going to say the teeth, but obviously that would get you a penalty. I'm going to tackle him, and I'm going to hit him hard every play. So you're going to have to give. And eventually, maybe that will force them to throw, which would give you an opportunity, because yesterday he was all over the map. Now, it was raining, but his passes were just not very accurate. He threw for 100 yards. So let's, before we kind of anoint this guy as John Elway, no, he's Barry Sanders, whose arm is, from an accuracy standpoint, has been much better than we all thought it would be. But last year, he threw for 58%. But his running is beyond dominant. And he's not taking very many hits. Now, is this sustainable for 15 years? No. Anyone that watches football understands that. That he's not going to be able to do this forever. But for the next 3-4 years, if he can avoid injuries, he can dominate on the ground. And they have a very good chance to win the Super Bowl this year. Which clearly all their chips are in the middle of the table. And given the way the Patriots are kind of falling apart, we'll get into them a little bit later. They might have the number one seed. The Ravens are really good. Good coaching staff. Special offense that's unique. And their defense is playing well. And if you got to go through Baltimore, that ain't an easy place to play. That was impressive. But I think that what was even more impressive is, like, I knew the Ravens were tough. I mean, they've been tough forever since Ray Lewis showed up. That their franchise is tough. I always question West Coast teams. Are they really tough? I live in the Bay Area. We're not tough. It's like no one could tell you that with a straight face. California ain't tough. It's not. We're soft. And a huge part of that is because of the weather. When I lived in Philly, people are tough. Why? It's cold as shit. You better be tough or you won't survive. So when West Coast teams go into tough environments like that, it's always a huge question mark. Are they tough enough to hang? And forever, Seattle under Pete Carroll with that whole crew of guys was. Harbaugh's 49ers, 100% was. Are the Rams? No. Are the 49ers? I wasn't sure. They showed up for a heavyweight fight ready to roll. They got hit in the teeth, and they kept swinging and throwing body blows back. The thing that really jumped out was how tough they were. Now, some things travel in the NFL, and it's two things that they do really well. Play defense and run the football. And their defense is really freaking good. And even yesterday, it was quote-unquote off, and they lost 20-17. It's not like they gave up 35 points. I mean, I don't care how many yards you run for, and we'll talk about the Chiefs a little later. People are like, well, the Chiefs gave up 130 yards on the ground to Josh Jacobs. They gave up 9 points. I repeat, 9 points. And 6 of those came in garbage time. Point of the game is to not let them score. Belichick's been saying for years, yards are very overrated. And I don't even have the box score up, but the 49ers defense did their job. Their offense just couldn't score. But the one thing they do really well in offense is run the football. And when you can run the football and you've got to go into inclement weather, that will always translate. When you got to play tough physical defense, that will help. And that's what Kyle Shanahan did it yesterday with Raheem Mostert. He's done it with Matt Breda. He's done it with Tevin Coleman. He's done it with this Jeff Wilson Jr. It doesn't matter who he throws. His dad did it forever with the Orlando Garys, with the Mike Andersons, with the, remember when they got to Washington, Alfred Morris. It's what they do well. And when they can get a good defense with that run game, they're going to have a chance. And I say this all the time about Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, Lamar Jackson's a tough dude. Jimmy Garoppolo, also very tough. Now, both the guys have some flaws, you know, especially like Jimmy will throw some just, whoa, what are you throwing into? He's a work in progress. He has as many starts as Sam Darnold. But the one thing that's abundantly clear, he ain't scared and he will not flinch. He might play bad, but it's not because he's scared and can't hang when it's 40 degrees and raining and you're playing the Baltimore Ravens. So that's a good start. Now, the problem for the Niners is they could be 10-2, and when all the dust settles, might be playing on the road in the playoffs and lose. You'd be like, God, we had this great season, we lost, and the NFC is so good. But they are clearly trending. The two most impressive games for the Niners have been two, you know, kind of back-breaking losses. The Seattle game, where they lost with no time left in overtime, and this game on the road in Baltimore, where they lost with no time left in regulation to, you know, walk-off field goals. So the Niners are really good. The Ravens are really good. That game was sweet. The NFC East, I'm at a loss. I picked the Cowboys to win the NFC. I think every human with a brain thought the Eagles were going to be really good. And right now they both stink. And it's pretty wild. It's one of the great elements of the sport of football. Is this unknown. Every year, we've all heard the stats forever of the, every year there's a worst to first team, right? Every year there's a team that we think is going to be some powerhouse that's not. And it's the intrigue. Like in basketball, we know the playoff teams. In baseball, for the most part, you know who's going to be good. Hell, I gamble and love golf. You got a pretty good idea in the majors who's going to be in the mix, give or take a couple guys. In football, every season beside the Patriots, you know, you get a bunch of shockers. Now, because both these two teams stink, that and the Redskins and the Giants are just a train wreck, this division does mean a lot to the NFL. Cowboys are the biggest brand. That's why when the Cowboys played the Patriots, the two biggest brands, they did the highest rated game of the year since the Super Bowl. The Eagles are a big deal. They're in a major market. They have famous players. They always win. They draw huge television ratings. Obviously, New York, number one media market, train wreck. DC has been terrible forever, but if they're just competitive, a lot of people watch. Right now, this division's really down. And the thing with the Eagles are the only team that go, yeah, we feel good about our coach. Won a Super Bowl with the guy. Last year, we won a playoff game. The coaching in this division is, the Redskins don't have one. Jason Garrett is surely going to get fired. Pat Shurmur, see ya, buddy. I told you from the jump, he was not a head coach. Nice guy, probably solid offensive coordinator, not head coach material. And we're learning that, clearly. But when I look at Dallas, and when I did the podcast for Friday, I had recorded before the game, by about halftime, you're like, the Cowboys are going to lose. They're not as good as the Buffalo Bills. And I look at Philly and Dallas, and I go, what is the identity of these two teams? Look at Dallas. What is their identity? What do they do really well? In theory, kind of throw the ball? Kinda. I mean, Amari hasn't been right for the last couple weeks. Their defense is very hit or miss. Their head coach doesn't really hang his hat on one thing. In theory, he's an offensive guy, but he doesn't call the plays. Hasn't for years. I wouldn't want Jason Garrett calling the plays even if he wanted to. The Eagles, who, when they won the Super Bowl a couple years ago, had a clear identity, right? Their pass rush was awesome. Wentz that year was Super Bowl, you know, he was MVP caliber. You felt like he was going to win the Super Bowl or have a chance. Their weapons, Ertz, Alshon, were just kicking ass and taking names. Nelson Aguilar had a big year. They were really, really good. And now you got Dallas getting shoved around by the Buffalo Bills, as they should. Sean McDermott has a clear identity. His teams are going to be smart, physical, and just out-tough you. And that's what they've done. Josh Allen, that fumble where he grabs it and jumps over the goal line, pumping his chest. The defense flying around, just crushing Dak. Buffalo's better because they're tougher. Do they have better players man-to-man? Probably not. But they just out-coached them, out-physicaled them. The Eagles, who their Achilles heel for the most of the season, besides the last 3 or 4 weeks when Wentz has been struggling, has been their defensive backs. They can't cover anybody. They made Devontae Parker look like Jerry Rice. Giving up, how many, was it 23 or 24 points in the second half? To the Miami Dolphins and Ryan Fitzpatrick. Both these two teams, like, you could make an argument, and I get the way this is never going to change, but on certain years, maybe have a rule that if you don't have a winning team in your division, like if the team that wins your division is 8-8, your division doesn't get to go to the playoffs. Like this year, it would be Seattle, San Francisco, Green Bay, Minnesota, New Orleans, and then probably like the Rams. But I'm sorry, NFC East, you don't belong in the playoffs at all. Neither of your teams are good. And it's not, the problem is one of these two teams is going to host a playoff game. Think about that. The Dallas Cowboys at 8-8 could host a playoff game. Like they're playing the Bears this weekend, or I think this Thursday. Why do I feel confident that the Cowboys are going to win this game? No confidence. The Eagles just, every week something goes wrong. Even when they kind of were playing well, it's like they're kicking the Dolphins' butt, watching at the bar, watching out of the corner of my eye, up a couple touchdowns, Wentz stats aren't bad, and then the second half goes, they can't cover anybody. So it's just the most important division top to bottom from a rating standpoint, which equals money, is having the worst season in the division in recent memory. It's pretty wild, but it's also what makes the NFL great. Okay, let's talk about two teams that actually turns out they play each other this week. The Chiefs and the Patriots. And they both feel like they're trending in opposite directions. The Chiefs, who just hosted their division rival, which I don't know how it's a rivalry because the Chiefs have owned the Raiders over recent memory, played in a game where, you know, Mahomes was kind of screwing around. And I don't totally blame him. It was a game that he could not lose. He is so much better than anything the Raiders have could possibly roll out. Oakland can't score points in cold weather because their quarterback just crumbles in that situation. I mean, Derek Carr is awful in weather games. And Gruden, who Andy Reid right now just owns, 4-0 against him. So they killed the Oakland Raiders. But as you see, Mahomes' health, which is by far the biggest issue for them heading into the playoffs. If he's 100% healthy, they got a shot every game they play. I don't care who they're playing. And their defense, which, you know, you talk to people with the Chiefs, you know, you implement a new defensive system, you're adding some new defensive players. You know, Frank Clark had been banged up earlier in the season. It just took Chris Jones had been banged up. It's taken them some time. But watching the last couple weeks, they're starting to get their mojo a little bit. We know when push comes to shove, as we come down the home stretch, and then in January, Andy Reid, Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, whoever they're playing at running back, will put up points on the scoreboard. The only question with the Kansas City Chiefs, can they stop people? And yesterday, they held them to 3 points. The Raiders got a garbage touchdown late in the game that the Chiefs ended up blocking the PAT and then returning it, and that was the only reason it was 40-9. That was a massacre. I think the Chiefs are, I kind of actually like them already against New England this week. We'll dive into some of New England's issues. But when you have a quarterback like Mahomes, you got a chance to win it every year as long as he's healthy entering the playoffs. Now, they got to battle back because they went through one of the toughest stretches of the Andy Reid Kansas City era, where they just didn't play that well. Even in games where they did play well, their defense got shredded, and they lost a bunch of games. It's the reason, you know, I think they had a stretch where they lost 4 of 6 games. Now, granted, one of those was with Matt Moore on Sunday night against the Green Bay Packers, but that Tennessee game was a pretty devastating loss. They just weren't playing very well. And you watch them now, it feels like the Chiefs kind of got their mojo back. And if they can come down the home stretch, beat the Patriots, and rattle off some wins, if you can somehow get to that, because the Patriots, there is no guarantee. Like, if the Chiefs can win out and beat the Patriots, the Patriots probably lose another game, and all of a sudden you're both 12-4. Maybe the Patriots have to play that first weekend, and the Chiefs can get a home field bye. This game is massive. But when you look at New England, you go, well, the Texans just threw the ball all over them. And their number one positive attribute on the squad has been their defensive backfield. You have not been able to throw it on them. And every time I looked up at the television yesterday, Fuller, Hopkins, someone just running down the field, catching bombs from Watson. Like, what is going on here? Because we do know about the Patriots. Their offense has been bad this year. It has been bad. Their passing game has been anemic. Julian Edelman, who is their best wide receiver, is banged up. And at the end of the day, he's a small slot receiver. While Jules is one of my favorite players of the last decade, there is not another slot receiver I'd rather have in a big game than a healthy Julian Edelman. He's had game winners in the Super Bowl. He's made big plays over and over and over again in his playoff career. He's a war daddy. But he's about all they got right now. Because N'Keal Harry, who I'm a big fan of, is coming back from injury reserve. And we know how hard this offense is on young players. Jacoby Myers, he's an undrafted free agent, so he's who we thought he was. It's just going to be hard as an undrafted free agent to make a huge splash all season long on the Patriots. And then Mohamed Sanu is already hurt. So, and Antonio Brown's long gone. They can't pass the ball. And Tom Brady, in a league that he's the greatest quarterback of all time. But I say it all the time, in this league, you have to be able to move around a little bit at quarterback. The day and age, to me, of seeing guys like Brady, you know, Eli, Peyton, Flacco, and obviously Eli and Flacco when they were better, Rivers are dead. Those quarterbacks are not coming into the league anymore. Look at the quarterbacks the last handful of years that have come into the league. Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Carson Wentz. Like, Jared Goff is much more like those old school guys, can't move, and he's getting destroyed until he played Vance Joseph, which we'll dive into a little bit later. But Brady, when you can't get open and they can't get rid of the ball immediately, he's kind of shit out of luck in the sense that he can't really move around. And you're like, well, of course Johnny can't move around. But their entire offense is predicated on getting the ball away really fast. Or when they have someone on the outside, whether it's a Gronk to push the ball down the seam, or a speed demon on the outside to push the ball down the seam. They don't have that. So they only have an intermediate passing game, and no one can get open. And I think we saw yesterday on the television broadcast when Brady's yelling at those guys, be more explosive, be more aggressive, play faster. I love you, Tom, but that's impossible. Maybe you can improve on that over the offseason with work and training. There's no way mid-game you can just, quote-unquote, play faster. No, your guys are as fast as they are. They can't get open. They're just not good enough. Some of these guys are young. They don't even know the tricks of the trade. They're just not going to be able to get open. That's just the reality. So can they be more explosive? No. They are as explosive as they are. That's your problem. And the run game last night worked for a split second. I guess it was two nights ago if you're listening to this on Tuesday. And they didn't really stick with it. Now, the problem was, in fairness to Josh McDaniels, they were down big. So you can't really stick with the run. When you're down multiple touchdowns in the second half, you got to be aggressive. And they're just not good enough to be aggressive. And when you think about some of the Patriots' wins this year, it's taken trick plays to win games. Now, they've used trick plays before to win games. It usually happens in the playoffs, not in just random regular season games. They need to get over the hump. And that's what it kind of feels right now. Their offense feels lost because they don't have the personnel. Their wide receivers are just not good enough. And I think when you look at Kansas City, you go, they do have the personnel to be awesome on offense. And they have the personnel on defense to just be functional. And then it comes down to in playoff games, I don't care how many yards you give up. It's kind of irrelevant. Belichick's always said, ooh, I give up 1,000 yards. If we only give up 14 points, we'll win the game. If we give up, 800 yards in the game and we give up 50 points, we're screwed. But if we give up, 320 yards and we give up 28 points, we'd be in trouble too. So it's about points. That's the point of the game. Score more points than the opposition. Your red zone defense is huge. So if Kansas City can tighten up their red zone defense, we know they're going to be able to score points. I don't know if the Patriots can score points. Even with their defense, if it's playing well, like, in a playoff game, are we sure they can get to 20 points? I'm not. I know yesterday they got to 22, but it was just such garbage time. They felt the majority of that game watching them, they were a single-digit offense. Like, you guys are scoring 7, 8, 9 points. And they're not playing very well right now. And it's not because they're coaching, their scheme. It's just their players on offense are just not very good. I'm sure by the time you're listening to this, every take possible has been out there on Freddie Kitchens in the shirt. So there's nothing probably I can say that's new regarding the Pittsburgh Star. Beside that, him wearing that shirt, I don't know how you can have a working brain and not say that's moronic. The Steelers, who are the Browns' daddy for my entire lifetime, the Browns, Steelers, I mean, what are you doing, Freddie? But wearing that shirt isn't just on Freddie Kitchens. It's a reflection on the Cleveland Browns. I've heard forever, like, John Dorsey, the guy knows talent. He knows talent. Part of being a general manager, and I say it all the time, is not just the draft. It's free agency. It's, you could argue, beside picking the quarterback, hell, you could argue it's even more important to get the coach right than picking the quarterback. And right now with the Browns, we don't know if they got either. But I'm not giving up on Baker yet, though the pictures after the game when he had this hand wrapped up, Baker, man, I got the same problem too. We all got to mix in some salads. You're not a good enough athlete to just get overweight. And right now Baker looks overweight. He looks terrible physically. He really does. Like, come on, man. This is the National Football League. This isn't like the beer drinking club. He looks bad. And when you look at Freddie Kitchens wearing that shirt, like, that's a reflection of John Dorsey. That's a reflection of Jimmy Haslam and Flying J, who have had their own issues. Of Jimmy Haslam giving John Dorsey the autonomy and the power to hire Freddie Kitchens. How does that happen? How could that possibly happen in a million years? You hire Freddie Kitchens to be your head coach. When they started out 2-6, I saw so many people saying, well, and it was true, their schedule was really hard early in the season. The schedule gets a lot easier as the season goes on. They could rattle off a bunch of wins. And they kind of did. But the one thing everyone with any sort of knowledge on the way the NFL works goes, that team with that head coach, even if they do get an easier schedule, they're 2-6, To get to 9-7, they'd have to go 7-1 down the stretch. We all said no chance. To go 6-2 down the stretch. That's just to go 6-2 is just to get to 8-8. You went, that's probably unrealistic too. Now, you look at their schedule, they still got the Bengals twice. They got the Cardinals and they got the Ravens. So maybe they can get to 8-8. That would be 6-2 on the second half of the season, which would be an improvement. But why is anything going to change with Freddie Kitchens? Here's their ultimate problem, though. If they go 8-8, do they give Freddie Kitchens another year? Because there would have to be conversation between John Dorsey and Jimmy Haslam. You know, we don't want to change. We want to keep the cohesion. We obviously went 6-2 down the second half of the season. So let's stick with Freddie Kitchens. You're just asking to get the same thing to happen to you next year. Because in a game, when you played Duck Hodges, he had four less completions than Baker Mayfield and the more yards and the same amount of touchdowns. Their stat lines look exactly the same. Mayfield, 18 of 32, 196, one touchdown, one pick. Hodges, 14 of 21. I guess he had a lot less attempts. One touchdown, one interception. How's that possible? How can that happen? It's coaching. Because the Steelers go into this, hell, for the last couple months, James Conner's been in and out. Juju missed this game. They had to go to Mason. Mason gets hit with a helmet. They bench him because he sucks. They go back to Duck Hodges. And they're just 7-5. And when all the dust settles, Steelers probably be 9-7. Pulling up their schedule right now. They got the Cardinals this week. Then they play the Bills at home. Then they go to the Jets and the Ravens. It's realistic. I mean, 9-7 is probably worst case. If somehow they could take out the Bills, they could be 10-5 going in that last week with the Ravens. That Bills game is going to be hard, but it's Sunday night in Pittsburgh. That's a pretty good game. Like, Mike Tomlin is a big boy coach. That's an $8 to $10 million coach. That's a Super Bowl champion. That's a high level guy. Freddie Kitchens, not a high level guy. Everything you need to know was by the shirt he wore. John Dorsey, epic mistake in hiring Freddie Kitchens. He signed up for this. The reason they're 5-7, and they are one of the truly great underachieving teams we've seen in recent memory. Because you do watch them and you go, God, they got talent everywhere. Beckham, Jarvis, the running backs. They got dudes. And when the dust settles, they'll be under 500. And the things that will define their season will be their star defensive end swinging a helmet at a dude's head and their head coach wearing a t-shirt. That is the Cleveland Browns in 2019. Okay, let's go around, I guess, football over the weekend. Let's start with college. Harbaugh. I'm a big Jim Harbaugh guy, but his 5 years at Michigan have been underwhelming. Obviously, he's not terrible. I mean, he's winning 10-9, worst case scenario, 8 games. But when Michigan got him, they were expecting maybe not national championships, but to make the playoffs. And he's 0-5 missing the playoffs. He's also 0-5 against Ohio State. But the biggest issue that I see is he's the fourth best team at best in his own conference. Obviously, Ohio State, they've been better than Michigan forever. I know Colin had a good tweet over the weekend. Michigan's never been Ohio State. Maybe on a given year, but historically, it ain't even close. But the issue that I see is that Penn State beat Michigan, beat them now back-to-back years. Wisconsin kicked their ass. So Michigan, in 5 years, all these players are Jim Harbaugh's. He's getting worked by Ohio State every year, and he can't beat the next two teams in the conference. It's just, it hasn't gone as planned. Bottom line, period, end of story. Ohio State's really good. LSU's really good. Clemson, I'm not quite sure on, but I would lean they're really good. For my fourth team, and it's going to be a hard game Friday night at Levi Stadium in the Bay Area. I hope Utah wins because I'd like to see Utah get their shot. I was eating lunch today in Hawaii, and I Googled Kyle Whittingham. He has been at the University of Utah since 1994. For a long period of time, he was the D-line coach. Then he became the defensive coordinator. Then, obviously, he became the head coach. Since 1994. 25 years of the same school. The guy has a tough team. They hang their hat on two things. Playing defense and running the rock. Zach Moss, future pro. They're just good. And I would love to see the Final Four be Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, Utah. I'm good with that. But, man, Harbaugh needs to pick his shit up because right now it's just not as good. Not good enough. Chris Peterson, who stepped down from University of Washington today, that's a big blow. I mean, he's been one of the best coaches in the country for the last decade plus. What he did at Boise was unreal. I mean, they were kicking everyone's ass. Georgia, Oregon, he was beating Chip, TCU. He was beating everyone in his path. The guy is a big-time football coach, super smart guy, UC Davis guy. I think his best team, he made the playoffs at Washington, but I stand by it. His best team of his career was the 2011 Boise team. That was the team that Kaepernick beat. Last-second field goal, I think Nevada hit. Boise had missed a field goal. I can't remember the exact sequence, but that team, I think, had 11 or 12 guys drafted. That team could have won the national championship despite being a mid-major. That team was awesome. Chris Peterson is just a badass. I'm going to miss him because that's a big blow for the University of Washington. Let's get to the NFL, the New York teams. Start with the Jets. You know, anytime you're not a good football team, and I think you start feeling yourself after a win or two, you're due for to get hit in the mouth, and they played the Bengals and they got killed. It also showed you the Bengals should never bench Andy Dalton for Ryan Lindley. Like, that shouldn't happen. Andy Dalton's worst day, he's better than that guy. He gives you the best chance to win. But at the end of the day, big picture, as long as Adam Gase is the guy, and who knows? I mean, I know he's not. He's going to return next year, but he's got to be better. I do think they got a quarterback that they can build on, and the Jets could maybe not be a factor next year, but should be much improved. Because obviously that division is the Patriots and the Bills are light years ahead of the Jets and the Dolphins. I guess the New York Giants and Pat Shurmur, like, they're just bad. Daniel Jones is not good. The Packers didn't even play that well and won with ease. You gotta love a good snow game. But you would imagine the Giants and John Mora have to be thinking about firing everyone. And to me, that's probably the move. Then the question mark is, who do they hire? Is it even that good of a job? Because part of it is you're taking over a job where you have Daniel Jones, who you just drafted in the first round, that incoming coach might not even like. It took the Arizona Cardinals, who Vance Joseph, and I think is a terrible football coach, Jared Goff, who had been one of the worst players in the league the last several weeks, he had 300-plus yards at halftime against them. Had 32, 43, 424 yards, and just eviscerated the Arizona Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals are going to end up probably like 4-11-1, despite having a really, really productive season from their young quarterback. It's all defense. Their defense is atrocious. It's like Swiss cheese. You can light them up like a Christmas tree. The Titans are hot. The best thing they ever did was make that move to Ryan Tannehill. I know the elephant in the room is like, what if Ryan Tannehill had been the starter from the jump? I don't know if you can necessarily play that game, but they're really hot right now. Derrick Henry is one of the most productive players in the league week in, week out, since Tannehill's kind of jumped on board. Tannehill's given them life in the sense of, you know, you turn on their game the last month, he's running over guys on the goal line. His toughness is on a different level than Mariota. And then as a thrower, he's a better player than Mariota. I once said on Twitter that I thought Mariota could be a better version of Alex Smith, and Titans Twitter came at me like they were an army. And it turns out I was wrong. Marcus Mariota can't hold Alex Smith's jock, you know, on his best day. And I think his days of being a starter are over, and props to Ryan Tannehill for Titans are going to make the playoffs. And they still play the Texans twice down the stretch. Hell, they could win the division. Chargers are 4-8. Chargers made the playoffs last year and won a playoff game. Made the playoffs, won a playoff game, 12-4. This year they're 4-8. And I mean, I get they were missing Derwin James, but 4-8, see ya, Anthony Lynn. But it's not Anthony Lynn's fault. Anytime you pay a head coach the lowest going rate in the NFL, you deserve to not be consistent. You deserve to lose. Could the Chargers have any less momentum going into this new stadium in Los Angeles? I don't think they could. Foles. Has Nick Foles had the most bizarre career in NFL history? He was drafted in the third round when I was in Philadelphia. Everyone liked him. Then Chip came and Vic got hurt and he became the starter. He had the great year. Then he gets traded to the St. Louis Rams. His career fails. Then he almost retires. Then Andy Reid talks him out of it. Then he goes back to Philly, becomes the backup for Carson Wentz. Carson's having an MVP season. He jumps in, wins a Super Bowl. Year Carson comes back, playing like shit, gets hurt again. Foles comes back, wins a playoff game, gets huge money to go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, breaks his collarbone, misses the majority of the season, comes back, gets a starting job back. Within two games, he's benched again. You couldn't make this thing up in a movie. It really is bizarre. I root for Nick Foles. Turns out he's just not that good, but he's had some hot moments. He beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. I mean, he hosted the NFC Championship trophy after a blowout against the Minnesota Vikings. He went on the road against Chicago Bears last year and Vic Fangio, the best defense in the league, and won. I get they missed a kick, but still, you just, Foles, you can't make this stuff up. Okay, let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag. Big Raider fan living in Maui. God, I should have hit you up. Will move to Vegas be better for the franchise? Fan base, free agent appeal, realistically will help them get to be a legit contender? That's a good question. I would say, in theory, it should help. My league sources tell me that last fiscal year, they were the second lowest revenue in the NFL, which they've consistently been. Them, the Chargers, the Bengals make the least amount of money. I think their issue, though, they're not very good. So let's say they go 7-9. Is Derek Carr going to be the quarterback next year? Like, what are they selling? Now, the first year, anytime you move, it's cool. People will go. Clearly, the casinos and the corporate money have bought the majority of tickets, and they plan on giving those, you know, to their fan base. Or not their fan base, but like to the whales, to the guys coming to Vegas. Well, if I'm in Vegas, and I'm betting, and I'm a whale, and I'm spending huge money, and I got a $10,000 a night date, and I'm playing in card games with six and seven figures, I'm not going to watch that Raider team. Now, if they are dramatically better, which I don't see how they're going to be dramatically better next year. Here's the problem for the Raiders. Like, quote-unquote, they made progress. Did they really? Their defense couldn't be any worse. Do they have any building block pieces on defense beside Max Crosby? Let me answer that. No. On offense, they have a really good running back. They have a really good tight end. Derek Carr is very hit or miss. Who else do they have? Like, Antonio Brown ain't re-walking through that door. Now, they do have some draft picks, but as we know, draft picks are hit or miss. I mean, they drafted a box safety in the first round this year. He went on IR after a game. Like, it's just tough. So, yeah, in theory, they should have more money, but they owe a lot of money. They owe relocation fees. They got to pay the bank back of what they owe. I think it's going to be a little more difficult till they don't even have their quarterback position answered as of right now. Who do you think wins the NFC West, Seahawks or 49ers? Also, do you think that team will have the number one seed? This is not going to be a cop-out, but I would say that right now, if the 49ers lose to the Saints this weekend, Seattle will win the division. If the 49ers somehow pull out the upset this week, they'll have a chance. Now, do I feel confident the 49ers are going to go into Seattle? And if that game is for the NFC West, that game will surely be flexed to prime time, Sunday night football. I wouldn't have much faith. Though, like I've said, the 49ers do things well that translate to traveling in tough environments. They run the ball and they play defense. And I was at the game when the Niners played Seattle without George Kittle, and it's pretty clear the Niners have better players. But as I talked about earlier in this podcast, Seattle, most games they play, don't have the better roster. That's not what they hang their hat on. The SEAL Team 6 members aren't even the best Navy SEALs sometimes, right? I mean, they are for that given SEAL team, but maybe are they the fastest, are they the smartest, or are they the toughest? Are they the most trustworthy? And Seattle's just, they got these intangible stuff that, I don't know, it's hard to ride against them. I've been talking shit about them forever, and they just won't go away. Do you think the Cowboys could take a long look at Greg Roman as their next head coach? Would he be qualified? I feel Dak is so underutilized as an athlete, and it could be interesting to see what he'd look like in that type of offense. Not a terrible idea, but I think Dak, unlike Lamar, is a good enough passer to run what you need to do to sustain. Like, if you run that offense, you do run the risk of getting your quarterback killed, of getting his leg broken, getting his arm broken, getting him slammed, getting him hurt. And Dak's at the point where he can carry you throwing the ball, that you can incorporate stuff like that, which actually Greg Roman once upon a time tried to do with Kaepernick in San Francisco. He was just incapable of doing it. the media doesn't like bringing that up, but I had a front row seat for it. I haven't forgotten. He was incapable of running a throwing offense. He could run the zone read stuff, but at the time they had figured it out, so you couldn't really run it anymore. I would say that they don't need, their offense, you know, I guess it sputtered a little of late, but yeah, it'd be interesting. I just think that if you're paying Dak $35 million a year, I know Jane Slater told Colin today that they actually might franchise him. That'd be pretty risky to kind of incorporate that offense. I know the RPO is called a run-pass option, but could you break it down how it works so the average football fan can understand how it works? Well, I don't really hang my hat on being a scheme guy, but and I might be wrong on this description, but to me a run-pass option is you either, obviously, you hand the ball off to the guy coming downhill behind you in the pistol, let's say, or the guy in the shotgun, or you throw it immediately. And part of having to throw it immediately is the linemen are blocking. Because the linemen on an RPO, they don't know what the quarterback's going to do. Now, obviously, there are called gives in the huddle that's an RPO, but it's an automatic give. Just like there's an RPO that's probably an automatic play fake pass. You'd have to get probably like a Greg Roman. Maybe I'll have to have him on to just break down the RPO. But to me, the most basic levels are like what Foles was doing a couple years ago when they made their run, is it's if you don't hand the ball off and the running back and it turns into a play action pass, you have a one read. You got to throw the ball. So basically, it either functions immediately or it's a dead play. It's obviously not dead, but you're kind of screwed. Now, I could be describing that wrong. There are people much more qualified to describe the RPO. I just know that the RPO, when run correctly, dominates. Hey, John, love the pod. I see why Colin likes you and gave you a chance on his podcast network. Yeah, I appreciate that. Do you mind going into your relationship with Colin, how you first met him, how long have you known him, and why did he approach you to host a podcast? People often ask me, like, how'd you know Colin? I think we met on through Twitter, you know? I'd probably been listening to a show since 2007, 2008, since my last couple years in college, and I listened to him all through my NFL career, and then even when I got out of the NFL, I mean, I idolized the guy just because I loved his show, like many of my friends in the NFL do, like many of my friends outside the NFL do. I mean, he's the best. And then I remember he followed me one time on Twitter. Maybe we DM'd a little bit, and then he had me on a show a couple times, and I guess we just developed a relationship that way. You know, it was just kind of organic in the millennial age, you know, just through social media. It's not some crazy story like, you know, I sat outside his office and I begged him for a shot. No, I vividly remember when two people followed me, Colin Coward and Adam Schefter. Pretty cool moments. You know, it's just kind of surreal. Just a guy that, you know, hosted a radio show at the time, and it was cool. So, yeah, that's pretty much the extent of it. And then when I used to host a radio show in San Francisco, and one of Coward's old producers, John Goulet, who obviously you know now, works with Colin again at Fox, then came over, and then maybe our relationship strengthened there, got to know him through Goulet a little bit better, but it's really not some crazy story. That's probably the extent of it. He likes my football takes. I think we're, you know, pretty like-minded. Sometimes people are like, Colin stole your football take, or I just think we think alike, you know? I mean, it's really that simple. Who are the main vets you think may get cut after the season due to salary cap reasons? Can the Niners cut Solomon Thomas after this year and save money? No. I'm also going to Maui in 2 months, and if you got some suggestions, would love them. We're golfing the same course you already played. Yeah, I played the Wailea golf courses. I played the Gold and the Emerald. They're like $150 each, but they're really cool. I mean, the ocean views are badass. The restaurants, Monkey Pod, a must. The Mai Tai there is elite. And I'm not some foo-foo drinker, but the Mai Tai there is bomb. You know, when in Rome, right, you got to drink Mai Tais. The big beach by the Grand Wailea, it's a public beach, it's pretty cool. And yeah, the restaurants are cool, and just enjoy it. I honestly, on the guys getting cut, I don't even know. You know, it's typically older players that make a lot of money, that have limited dead money, you know, that will hit the impact the salary cap for dead space. So right, we'll get into that probably like February. My head's not really there yet. Been a fan for a long time. Keep dominating. Appreciate it. I'm a big Bears fan, and I want to know where we go from here. Nagy's your guy, and we crushed it last season, but this season hasn't been the best. What are your thoughts on the Bears' long-term answer? Well, they're 6-6 right now. To me, if they can somehow finish like 9-7, that would be a pretty remarkable finish. Also would be bad for the Trubisky haters, which I would say I would be one. I would say the biggest thing, regardless whether they finish 8-8, 9-7, or 7-9, would be they got to figure out their quarterback situation because they do have talent. They're going to get offensive talent just because their coach has been around a lot of offensive talent under Coach Reed. Defensively, they have a ton of good players on their team. But is Mitch Trubisky good enough to carry you? We have our answer. And I know there's been some stats floating around, like he's been equally as productive as Tom Brady since like week 5, like bullshit. I mean, we all watch the guy. He's just a guy. You know, we see the good young quarterbacks, what they look like. He's not one. So who can you get that's better than that? Like, does Andy Dalton become available? Can you get Cam? Would you take Phillip Rivers for a year just to see if you can get some lightning in a bottle? I just think that's the most important thing. And then obviously the kicker situation, Pinheiro sucks again. That you got to be good on special teams because you're not going to be a super high scoring team and you're going to be a defensive squad. So to me, the key is quarterback. And because when you look at the year they had a really good season, didn't the defense lead the league in takeaways and have like 8 touchdowns? You know, it was stupid the amount of touchdowns they had, which really wasn't sustainable. But this year, they actually haven't been that bad. You know, they've still been pretty good. The problem is they haven't stayed to their same standard because the standard was basically unsustainable. So I just think they need to figure the quarterback situation out first and foremost. I haven't asked Matt. He wouldn't even tell me what he thinks of Mitch. I just watched his public comments. I know people in the building, they like the guy. He's a very, very likable human. Right, high character, hardworking, but I just don't think he's good enough. The problem is the GM that does have some juice in the organization, he picked him. And he's made some comments like he still really likes him. And I think the GM like is probably afraid to admit he's wrong, but there's nothing wrong with admitting you're wrong. You've put together a good team. You've had back-to-back years. Well, you won the division 2 years ago. And then if this year you can go 8-8, 9-7, you had a solid year with having a terrible quarterback. Just move on and try to make the playoffs next year. Let's see. One more question before I get you all out of here. At what point do we need to... this is the one I wanted to answer. At what point do we think about Doug Peterson's job security? If your guy Howie is the genius that you say he is, can't the shortcomings of his team be blamed on the guy who is the head coach in the OC? Well, 2 years ago, the Philadelphia Eagles won this thing called the Super Bowl with their backup quarterback. In the history of the Philadelphia Eagles, they had never won this thing called the Super Bowl. Last year, when they didn't look like they were going to make the playoffs, made the playoffs again with their backup quarterback, and then they happened to win a road playoff game against that Bears team that had the best defense in the league. So Doug Peterson, in a 3-year span, has 1, 2, 3, including the Super Bowl, 4 playoff victories. And I love the intensity of Philly. I loved how passionate people were about sports there. It's no different than me as a human. I'm equally as passionate. I've dedicated my life to it. But I think sometimes we jump the shark on some of this shit. Like, we're talking Doug Peterson's job security. He won 4 playoff games in 2 years, including the Lombardi Trophy. I think he's earned, even from the fans, who have high standards, as well as they should. Team means a lot to a lot of people. The benefit of the doubt for a couple years. You know, this is a big offseason. Obviously, I think the thing that hurts this year is you go, God, the NFC East might be the worst year in the NFC East ever. We could have won the division by 2 games if we would have just gone 10-6. And I think what hurts also is most people, the fans in Philly, the outsider fans like me all around the country, thought the Eagles were a locked playoff team. And at 5-7, you're not going to the playoffs. So, listen, Doug Peterson deserves somewhat of a hall pass this season. I know that's not maybe what you want to hear. But again, 4 playoff victories, 2 years, including the thing they call the Lombardi Trophy. Appreciate everyone listening. headed back to the, I say it's the States. This is actually America, but I promise you, Maui does not feel like America. For those of you that live probably in the Midwest and the Northeast, you probably don't come to Hawaii. If you ever get a chance, this place is badass. I would highly recommend it, Maui. It's sweet. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the week. And see you a little later. Adios. Peace.